This is an Alien UFO Podcast Extra episode, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. So in this episode, I'm talking to Byron Lacey about his book, Chosen, Chronicles of an Alien Abductee. Hi, Byron. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me here, Simon.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called Chosen, Chronicles of an Alien Abductee. So can you tell us, what is your earliest memory of interactions or encountering this thing?
My earliest memory was in 1956 when I was 6 years old. And we lived in Seagoville, Texas. We had just moved there from Anthony, which is near El Paso. My father had gotten a job there in Seagoville working for the federal prison. He had been in the federal prison system for a year or two in Anthony, and he transferred so he would be closer to his parents who were still alive at that time. I don't remember what season it happened, but I know I was 6 years old. My birthday is in March, and we moved there in March. One night, my mother had put me to bed as usual. She would take me into the bedroom and tuck me in, and I would usually have to kick the covers off of me because it would be too hot. And as she was leaving, she would ask if I wanted the hall light on, and I would say yes. So she would leave the door about half open and leave the light on in the hall. Then I turned around to go to sleep, and there were three little guys at the left side of the bed, at the foot of the bed on the side. And I couldn't figure out what the heck they were doing in there. And I screamed for my mother, and I looked at the door to see if she was coming, and she came in pretty quickly. Well, I told her what had happened, and she said that I needed to go to sleep, and she tucked me back in. She didn't say it was a dream. She didn't say it didn't happen. She didn't say anything about it. She just tucked me in, and then she left the room, and she left the hall light on, and she closed the door halfway, and I turned back around and went to sleep. The next night, after she put me in bed, after she left, the same thing happened. And it went the exact same way. She still didn't say anything about them. Then the night after that, which was the third night, they seemed to like to do things in threes. I turned around and, no, wait, I'm sorry. The second night, she sat down on the bed and she said, "Son, if they show up again, if they come in here, don't call me, because they will not be here when I get here. So you're going to just have to deal with them yourself." And then she tucked me in and she left the room. It was the third night that she said that to me, and she left the room. And when I turned around, they were back. I was laying in the bed, and I suddenly could not move. And I noticed that over to my side, there was a very tall being that looked like Captain Hook, and from Peter Pan. And Peter Pan was my favorite book at that time. The bed started rotating and the room started getting larger. The strange looking guy, the Captain Hook, he started dancing around. When I realized I was an abductee and I started finding out things, it was pretty obvious to me that the Captain Hook was actually a mantis, and he was making me see his large head as a pirate's hat, and he was making me see his pirate's vest as a robe. And the aliens that wear robes are of a higher rank than the ones that don't. I was beginning to get sort of freaked out, and just all of a sudden, before I yelled or anything, everything was gone. The little guys were gone. Captain Hook was gone. The room was back to its normal size. The bed had been rotating in the room, and it had stopped. and it was in its normal place, and I could move again. So I didn't call my mother because she told me not to. I turned over and went to sleep, and I covered my head. And I'd covered my head for years, back till I was in my 40s, so that, and by then it was just a habit. But I covered my head because I decided I didn't want to see them again. Although they didn't hurt me that I knew of, and they didn't frighten me, it was just unsettling to see them in my room.
Was there a thought then that with what your mother said to you, it was almost like she knew what was going on and she knew that she couldn't help you?
I didn't really think about it at that point. But in 1961, another event happened. And every once in a while, I would think about what happened in my room. In fact, I thought about it on purpose from time to time just so I wouldn't forget it. But it wasn't always on my mind. And in 61, there was a song that became very popular in the United States, which was popular or came from England, called Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavor on the Bedpost Overnight? Yeah. And I like that song, but it's sort of funny. But I lay down to go to sleep, and it started playing in my head. Now, I had never had an internal dialogue that I remembered, or if I did, it had never disturbed me. But I think this is when it actually started, and I've had it ever since. Anyway, the song started playing in my head, and it wouldn't stop. And all night long, it was playing in my head, and I couldn't go to sleep. I tried not to think about it. I couldn't stop it. And the next morning, my mother came into the room and said it was time for me to get up to go to school. And I'm laying there. I said, I can't go to school. I haven't slept at all. And she said, what do you mean? I said, well, the song kept playing in my head. And she said, I'm going to fix your breakfast. You come into the kitchen, get dressed and come into the kitchen. And I said, okay. So I did what she said. I got dressed. I went in and went to the kitchen, and she said, all right, you're going to eat breakfast, and then you're going to get on the sofa. I'm going to give you a soft drink, and you're going to watch television all day. You can watch cartoons, but you're not to go to sleep because you're going to sleep tonight, and you're going to get up and go to school tomorrow. I said, okay. She gave me breakfast, and then she went into the living room with me and gave me a pillow and put me on the sofa, turned the TV on, and gave me a soft drink, which of course had caffeine in it, but I don't know if they thought about that at the time. And she went back into the dining room. Now, I could see into the dining room because it had a double opening for French doors, but there were no French doors. And she took the phone off the wall. It was right next to the door of the kitchen. And she went into the kitchen and she had a conversation with someone. And I could hear that she was talking, but I couldn't hear what she was saying. And I didn't know who she was talking to. Well, about around 4 o'clock, Dad came home and he walked through the front door and he didn't say a word to me. He didn't look at me. He just walked straight into the dining room where my mother was. And he took her by the hand and led her into the kitchen. And they had some kind of conversation. And my father was rather intimidating looking. He had a burr haircut. He's about 6'3" or 6'4". He weighed a couple of hundred pounds and it wasn't fat. And he was a prison guard and he was dressed in his uniform. And he looked a lot like Dirty Harry. And he had a burr haircut. So anyway, he came out of the kitchen and he sat down on the sofa next to me and he said, son, and this was the first thing he said to me, son, if you don't straighten up, we're going to take you to a psychiatrist. And I'm going, I mean, that was like being hit in the face with something. I'm going, what? I didn't say that to him because you didn't talk back to my father. I didn't say anything, but I'm going, what is this? All because a song played in my head? And he said, we Lacys don't talk about ourselves. I didn't even know anything about my parents unless I was with them when it happened. Now, I found out later that was actually a lie. And he said, you don't talk about yourself and you don't tell people what's going on. You don't want to be famous. You don't want people to know who you are. You don't want anything like that. And then he told me that a distant relative of mine from who lived in the late 1800s, early 1900s, had told her family that little men came into her room and talked to her at night. And they tried to get her to stop saying that, but she held on to it tenaciously. She insisted that it was true, and she was put into a mental institution. And he said, she died in there, and you don't want that to happen to you.
It's amazing, isn't it? The suggestion there that your grandmother might have experienced something such a long time ago before it was really thought that this kind of thing was happening.
She wasn't a direct relative. She was in the line. She wasn't like my grandmother or anything. My grandmother did work at a mental institution. When he was talking, I'm going, he's talking about those little men. When he said little men and came in and talked to her in a room, I go, he's talking about those little men. He remembers what happened when I was 6 years old, and I haven't hardly even thought about it. And I didn't tell him, but my mother must have, but he remembered it. And it made me think that there was something important about it because of him remembering it and recalling it instantly when this thing happens. Plus, I had not mentioned little men. I had mentioned a song playing that I heard on the radio. So anyway, I just tucked that away. And when I discovered in 2009 that I was actually an abductee, I went, he knew all about it. And right after I found I was an abductee, I went to what's called a Dreamland Festival by Whitley Strieber. He threw this in, I think it was Memphis. Anyway, there was going to be a psychic medium there named Marla Freeves, and she had been the technical advisor for the television show medium, and she also had worked with a lot of different police agencies in solving crimes because she would contact the deceased person and she helped them to solve these crimes. Well, I wanted to go because I just felt like I should, even though I hated to travel. And a friend told me I should go. He's the one that told me they were having it. So he's also the one that told me I was abductee, which is another story. Anyway, I went and I took his picture with me because of things I had seen about mediums that sometimes they work better with a picture. So I sat down on the very front row. And I always sat in school and every place I'd sit near the back any time. I didn't want to draw attention to myself, not necessarily because of aliens. It's just the way I was. So anyway, she's going to do three readings. And she wants to know who wants a reading. And everybody holds up their hand. And I hold up my hand. And she picks this woman that's sitting about 10 people away from. And she does a reading for her, and it sounded real good. The woman was very amazed. And then she goes, okay, who's next? And I'm sitting there waving my picture. And she walks up to me, because I'm right at the edge of the seats. She walks up to me and says, well, I see you came prepared. And I said, yes, I did. She took the picture from me, and she didn't ever look at it. She put it the face of the picture against her upper leg, above her knee, and she stepped back some steps, and she told me that my father had died because he fell. And I explained to her, I said, yeah, that's sort of what happened. And she said, I'm trying to tell you what he's telling me. He told me he died because he fell. And I said, yes, he fell and he broke his hip. And then they operated on him. And I knew he was going to die, by the way. They operated on him. And the next day, when he came out of the anesthetic, he would not let them give him anticoagulation shot. So he got a blood clot in his leg and it killed him. So, but he died from falling. It was just circuitous. Anyway, so I asked her if he knew about the aliens. And she goes, in a booming voice, she goes, I know everything. And I started laughing and I thought, well, he's actually got a sense of humor, even though he's dead, because he did act like he knew everything when he was alive. When he was alive, if it was like he was what was right and wrong in the world. It was his opinion was what was right. So then there were some other things she said. Yes, he knew about them, and you're the fourth generation of your family to have been abducted. So it was him, my grandfather, and my great grandfather. That's how everything fell into place, what I knew about him. She told me a few other things, and everything was accurate and correct.
You've been having these encounters throughout your life? How often have they been happening?
Until 2009, I would wake up and I would have bruises, I would have punctures, just weird things like that. In fact, I got married when I was 21, and we had been living together for a very short time. And my wife goes, you know, you hurt yourself when you're in bed asleep more than anyone I've ever known. And because I would come in and we would decide, well, I must have gotten up and walked to the bathroom and ran into the coffee table. I don't know how I got that bruise. And lots of other strange things happened. My life was saved several times. But we always, after we started, we've been married about 3 years, we started meditating. And so from our point of view, we thought it was spirit guides that were guiding us, that were protecting me, or that were making me know these things. Like the first time I meditated, we were in college and it was going to cost $25. Transcendental meditation had just come to Nacogdoches with this student. He was teaching it. It had just come to the United States, actually. And $25 was a lot of money in 70. It was 71 or 72. It was a lot of money. I mean, gasoline was 25 cents a gallon. So I sat down in the rocking chair and I thought, I think I can meditate. And I just, we had some music playing and I just really focused on the music, but I didn't memorize the music. I didn't play it in my head. I made my brain a blank by just letting the music flow through me. And then all of a sudden, everything got totally black and I felt like I fell through the chair I was sitting in. I fell through the floor. I fell into this total blackness all around me. And then this little figure about an inch tall popped into view in front of me, and I couldn't feel anything. I didn't seem to be breathing. My body was gone. And this little figure that looked exactly like me, and he was about 3 inches tall, 1 inch to 3 inches tall. It's hard to judge size in nothingness. And he looked like me, and he looked like he was made out of flesh and bones and meat, but he was not animate. He didn't move. And then, poof, I was back in the room. And I told Barbara what had happened, and she just sits there looking at me. And I said, I think I know how to meditate. I probably don't even need to go to that class. She said, well, I want you to go anyway. I've been having a lot of trouble with my nerves because of college. And so, and especially graduate school, which I was in. So I went and got the how to meditate, got the mantra and all that stuff. And nothing else dramatic like that happened for quite a while. Well, she, unbeknownst to me, went and started looking in the few books that they had about meditation, metaphysics and stuff at the college library. And she brought one of the books home and she showed me a thing about the Atman, which is a little figure that looks like a human being. And it is like the blueprint of what you will be look like when you're born.
You've had all these encounters. Can you tell us about an incident you had at summer camp where there was some missing time?
We'd stay up late, and I was the art director, and I became the director of the camp because I was the only one that was 21 at that time. And so, as the owner said, you're the only person here that can be sued other than me. So she wanted me there so I could be sued. That was a pleasant thought. Well, we played music, and it was on a weekend, and almost everybody in the camp left for the weekend except like six kids that stayed there all summer long. These were rich kids from Dallas, and they were anywhere from 11 to 14 or 15 years old, maybe even 16. We would play guitars out on the back porch, and we stayed up till like 1 o'clock, and then we'd go into the bed to the cabins, and the cabins had a solid wall for 4 feet and then screen wire with flaps that you close, but they were open because it's so hot. And so they were braced up and you could see all the way around except the very back wall. I laid down in the bed and I laid there for a minute and I turned over and the sun was coming up. So it had taken me somehow 6 hours or 7 hours to turn over, but it only seemed like a minute. And I drug around all the next day. I went and took a really super cold shower and drank lots of soft drinks that day to have plenty of caffeine to stay awake.
So it was like you were awake all night, but your memory of what happened all night was removed?
But yes, because, I mean, in the time it took me to turn over, that was just like a few minutes. So I turn over and there it's daylight, which means it took me 6 hours to turn over. But actually, now at the Dreamland Festival, I met this woman who is working to be she was a nurse, and she was also studying hypnotism. She wanted to be a hypnotist, and she was an abductee, but she wouldn't really talk to very many people about it. She was still shy. A lot of abductees don't want to talk about what has happened to them. So, but she wanted to help other people who were abducted, and she was learning hypnotism, and she'd been studying for about a year. So on the last day, we got out early, and we went up to her room, and she put me into a hypnotic spell. And in the hypnosis, what happened was I got into bed, and then the grays came into the room, and they methodically got all of us. There were about 12 of us in all, probably, got us all out into the big clearing in front of the middle of the camp. That's like, was a pasture at one time, and it had a street light, and there was a ship there, and everybody seemed to be in a trance except me. I was awake. And at one point I asked one of the grays if they had abducted everybody because of me. So at that point too, on some level, I knew I was an abductee. Well, they said, no, we were just coming here anyway. So we got everybody. We were coming here to get everybody. That's what he said to me. which made me feel a little better because I thought it was my fault that they'd been abducted.
Did you get the feeling that they've done this a lot with you, that they've taken you and just removed the memory of it?
Yes. One time my wife and I went to Austin. It takes 5.5 hours, and somehow it took us 7.5 hours to come home. I was sitting on my sofa. Well, first, I have this constant noise in my ears that is sometimes called tinnitus, but I believe it's an implant. And at any rate, as an experiment, I got a CD that had sonic specific frequencies that were supposed to help tinnitus. And I listened to it every night. It said to listen to it 3 times a week. And I listened to it 2 or 3 times a day, every day. And I listened to it before I went. And after a week or two, I woke up one morning and the sound was completely gone. I was real happy about that. This was the first time I had ever heard silence. Even as a child, I heard this noise. It's like the forest at night, like cicada and different things like that. I went through the whole day and it was great. And I was watching TV. And then suddenly my nose, it felt like air had been pumped into my sinuses. And my nose was burning like somebody had shoved their finger into it. And the noise was really loud. And the TV changed shows. It was a different show on than what I had been watching. And I had been halfway through a show, and that was a totally different show that had just changed instantly. Anyway, this happens pretty quick. And then all of a sudden, the pain goes away, you know, like turning down the knob of a radio or a television volume. The pain goes away. The air has gone out of my nose, doesn't hurt anymore, but the sound is still back, and it's really loud, and the TV show is wrong. So I figured out that somehow I'd lost about an hour of time, 30 minutes to an hour of time, because I was actually in the middle of the next television show. So they had come into the house. They had put the implant back in my head. Then they had left and wiped my memory out.
And do you feel that they are kind of like they have a system and it's part of the process or the order of how they're told to do things, that you have to remove the human's memory at the end of what you're doing?
Yes, I believe they follow the rules completely. There's a hierarchy and they're not the boss. They're the flunkies. So, yes, they do what they're told to do. The next day, the noise was so loud. And I'm going, God, this has got to go away. And in the evening, it had not changed. And I'd given it hours. And I laid down to meditate. And I got into a really deep state. And I said, you guys have messed up. And you have got to fix this. This just isn't going to work. And I went down into a deep trance, and I could hardly tell I was breathing again, but I could feel it was like this 6-sided or 8-sided column rose out of my body where my solar plexus is. And then I could feel like a hand or something was swirling on this column in a certain direction, and suddenly the noise just went and it was back down to normal, and the column sunk back into my stomach, and then that was it. That was gone. They didn't say anything to me. They didn't say we're going to fix this, but they did. They fixed it.
Can I ask you about Elizabeth Anglin? Did she say that she met you during one of her abductions?
She said she didn't like me. She met me on the ship that I was working with them. And what she meant was I was showing people around and leading groups of people around. So, yes, she said I worked with them. And then later, she ended up working with them too.
So when you say work with them, it's like you're working with the ETs to shuffle humans around their ship?
Right. Like, you know, take them into that room in there and I'll lead them in there. Now, I don't remember any of that, but she has a pretty good memory of things.
Because I've heard this before somewhere else. It's very interesting that, you know, she would know who you are because she'd seen you on one of their ships.
I thought so too. Because when we met, I don't remember where it was, but she goes, well, I know you. And then she told me the story. She said, and I didn't like you at all because you were helping them. But then I've been helping them too. She wrote the foreword to my book.
And so do you feel that you're a contactee or you're an abductee?
At first, I thought I was an abductee because that's what I heard about first. But as time went on, I'm going, well, they're contacting me. I mean, they talk to me sometimes, so I must be a contactee.
So was there a time you tried to film yourself? You left a camera running overnight while you were asleep?
Yes, I did find the film. It's like 8 hours of film that you have to look through to find a little thing. I put a clock on the bed, and it was a large clock, about a foot across, but round. I laid it on the bed. I put a camera filming me, and I put another camera, because I had two, that was filming the camera and the clock in a mirror. So I went to sleep, or I tried to go to sleep. I hardly slept those nights, but I wore a mask around 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock. I can't remember the time. Now, these are digital cameras. They cannot be focused. You can't do anything to them except turn them on. They're just completely automatic. Well, at one point, and I did it for 3 nights in a row, at one point, the picture goes completely out of focus and it stays there for 5 or 10 minutes and then it comes right back. Nothing you could see. Then at another point, the camera started moving back and forth sideways and it did that for about 5 or 10 minutes. And then it moved up and down for about 10 minutes. Not a great distance, but you can see the pictures moving. So something was affecting the cameras, and I feel they were probably in the room, and this is how they dealt with the cameras.
So there was a thing in the book where you say you feel like when they talk to you, it seems like they took it for granted that you knew who they were.
Yes. They never gave any explanation. Like, they just talked to me. One day I was in Hastings, but I was renting a video, and this one video, I had seen the box to it and the cover, and it looked really good, and I wanted to watch it, but it was about a man being buried in a box in the Middle East, kidnapped, buried in a box, and the whole movie takes place in that box. And so I have claustrophobia, and I thought, I don't know. But one day, I just felt sort of brave, and I thought, I'm going to watch this movie. And I go into Hastings, and I'm standing there, and I pick the movie up, and the voice that always talks to me, it said, don't get it. And I said, what? And I'm talking out loud, too. I realize people around are hearing this one-sided conversation. And it said, don't get it. I said, but I like the way the box looks. I want to. He said, you won't be able to watch it. And I went, well, okay, I appreciate you watching out for me. I've said this to him several times. I appreciate you watching out for me, but I'm going to go ahead and try and watch it. And if I can't, well, then I've wasted $1 because it was on special. So anyway, I took it home and I ate dinner and then I got on the sofa and I put it in the VCR, put it in the player and turned it on, and it's just total darkness. And then you hear a guy striking a cigarette lighter. And he strikes it like three times. And then there's light. And I go, wah! And I couldn't watch it. I drew my feet up onto the sofa. And I turned it off immediately because of the thought of being laying down in that box. And something similar happened. I was leaving a lumberyard. I was going to go home one direction. And this, the voice, now I've heard this voice before. I heard it before I even knew they were the aliens. I just realized. Anyway, he said, take the loop. I said, and I'm sitting there getting ready to pull onto the road that I can either go right or left. And either way I can get home. Right was to the loop, and I said, I don't want to go that way. It takes too long. I want to go to the left. And they said, car accident. And once again, I said, well, I appreciate you looking out for me, but I'll be really, really careful. So I went to the left, and a guy, after I got on the main road, a guy pulled in front of me to drive in front of me, and he almost hit my car, and I slammed on my brake and I hit my horn, and he held his hand out the window. Well, anyway, and I zoomed around him, and after just a few minutes, suddenly he pulled back in front of me, only this time he slammed on his brakes. He was trying to make me hit him. So I, and he was in a big SUV, I swerved to the right and took an exit immediately and went home and didn't play. But if they hadn't warned me, I would not have been looking for any of that to happen. So I might have hit him the first time. I probably definitely would have hit him the second time.
And do you get the feeling that you volunteered for this? Because I thought this is something I read in the book where you kind of say that you may have volunteered this for this before you were born.
Right. Well, first off, I've heard that we have a contract before we're born, and that we can break that contract. And I meditated trying to break the contract, and I got into an extremely deep meditation where I was disassociated from my body completely. And I saw a metal rod, and I would say it was about 5 feet long, but I'm not sure. And it had a sphere on it that was made of metal. It was stuck through, and it was there stationary in front of me for a moment or two, and then it was gone. And there were no words, but I had the feeling that this was my contract and that there's no way I could break it. I couldn't get that metal sphere off of that metal bar. So anyway, at another time, I had a psychic reading by a woman that lives in London, interestingly. And another writer mentioned her in his book, and I can't remember his name right now. Well, I decided, I've been to some psychics that helped me, and I didn't know one at that particular time. So I contacted her by email, and she said she would do a reading for me, and then she would record it. And so I was supposed to pick some numbers, tell her my birth date, several different things, and ask a certain number of questions. I think it was three or four. And then I would get an email with an MP3 attached, which was about 30 minutes to an hour long. And that was the reading. Well, the first year, the reading was 100% correct. So I ordered another one. And in the second one, she says, now, I know you're going to think this is part of my talking like I'm trying to be British. I know you're going to think this is funny, but you're one of them. So I go, And she said, you're probably going to think I'm crazy. And I thought, she's crazy. But the year went on, and as things happened, I would check them off of the list of what she told me was going to happen that year. And at the end of the year, everything had happened. Of course, that had not happened because, I mean, there was no way for it. But I thought, it really sounds plausible. So I got into another meditative state, and I got very deep, and I started thinking about it, and I thought about how I always felt like I didn't fit in. I felt like I was an orphan left on my parents' doorstep. I don't go in with society all that well, especially at that time. Just all these different things, and I didn't feel like I belonged here. And I got to where I intellectually believed what she said was true, and I emotionally believed what she said was true. And at that point, I suddenly was no longer breathing, was no longer aware of my breath. And it always taken me 10, 20 minutes to get into a trance like that. It's almost impossible anyway. Anyway, my body and everything was gone, except I felt these two fingers reach into my skull, at the base of my skull, reach in and grab me. I guess you could call it your soul, my soul, and pulled me out. And I was a small sphere, and everything was gone. And then a grid of light appeared in front of me. And like I said, it's impossible to judge size at that point. There's nothing to relate it to, especially in total blackness. Well, this grid appeared, and it seemed to go on forever in all four directions. And a voice said, the Council of Three. It said it in my head, or actually it just said it. The Council of Three. And then there were three beings that were in thrones that were attached to this grid, and they were made of light. The thrones were made of light. The beings were made of light. The clothes were made out of light. Everything was made out of light that was not black. And one of them, the middle one, and I could tell he was speaking for all of them, he said, we're very proud of you. We've been waiting for you to figure this out. And then I heard a noise that was like when you would dial up to a computer over the telephone a long time ago, a modem, this screeching, screaming, and I saw images coming at me, just tons of images, words and all kinds of things, pictures. Now, I didn't see it with my eyes or anything because I wasn't even aware of my body. I was this sphere. And I could see 360 degrees, which is something I can't even imagine now, because I could see behind me, below me, and top of me, everything, just spherical vision. And all this stuff went through. And then it was gone, and I was wide awake. And I couldn't figure out what they'd done. I know, and I learned later that was a download of information, and I know some of that information now. Over time, a little bit of it would arise from my subconscious or whatever. But the most immediate thing that hit me was this phrase that said, the interest on your debt is the chains of your slavery. And it seemed so profound and so overwhelming that I immediately, the next pay period, started paying off my debts. I would not go get videos or anything. Any extra money I had went to paying up my credit cards. And after a year, I got them paid out.
the book's called Chosen, Chronicles of an Alien Abductee, and people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yes, sir.
Well, it's been great having you on the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Well, I enjoyed it. I appreciate it.
And that was an interview with Byron Lacey about his book, Chosen, Chronicles of an Alien Abductee. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended episodes. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. And when you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. There are two tiers. In the $3 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. And in the $6 a month tier, you get an extended episode every week. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.